Those who make decisions in this town, presidents and congresses, Democrat and Republican, have made very bad decisions in the past that have helped create those very murderous conditions that these asylum seekers are running from.
For the past 13 years, Darfur has been faced with the systematic and well-organized genocide, and no one seems to want to take action.
Thanks to the media and politicians, immigrants have been painted into this twisted image. My parents are immigrants, and I know they're not criminals nor are they stealing your jobs or your money. They do not fit your twisted image of intolerance. My tías and my tío and our family friends and that man who owns the baker you like, none of them fit your painting.
Welcome to On the Ground, onthegroundshow.org, voices of resistance from the nation's capital, produced for WPFW Pacifica Radio in Washington, D.C. I'm Esther Averam. Today, voices and artists from the Rally for Refugees held August 28, 2016 on the National Mall on the 53rd anniversary of the historic March on Washington. There's a global refugee crisis with 65 million people displaced in the aftermath of the U.S. invasion of Iraq. It is estimated that one-third of those officially recognized as refugees are Iraqi or Syrian. But so many people in our own hemisphere are not designated as refugees fleeing violence in Honduras, El Salvador, or Guatemala, violence in which the United States is complicit. Rally organizers wanted to press policymakers to increase the paltry number of 10,000 Syrian refugees in the U.S. A number of organizations, including Amnesty International, joined together under the banner of rallyforrefugees.org, where there is information about fundraising and volunteer opportunities to help refugees. Recording artists Gregory Porter and Common, featured at the rally, have also joined in to produce the song Running, the Refugee Song, which can be downloaded online, and all proceeds will benefit refugees. Here are voices from the rally.
Good morning. Can you say welcome? Turn to your neighbor and say welcome. Welcome. That is our message here today. My name is Sarah Browning. I am the co-founder and executive director of Split This Rock. It's a national organization dedicated to poetry that bears witness to injustice and provokes social change. You'll be hearing some poetry, some incredible music, some speakers, former refugees themselves, who will be giving testimony about their lives and their experiences, and from amazing organizations that work to resettle refugees and to change U.S. policy. So we welcome more of our sisters and brothers and neighbors. Over 65 million people have been displaced from their homes. 50% of that 65 million are children. Refugees live an average of 17 years in refugee camps. And one-third of refugees worldwide are from Syria and Iraq. Did you know that? One-third. And yet the U.S. has committed to resettling only 10,000 Syrian refugees. Is that enough? No. It's our jobs here today to tell our elected officials up here on the Hill and over there in the White House that our hearts and our country is big enough to welcome our neighbors from around the world. We're calling for at least a doubling of refugee resettlement in this country. We're calling for at least 1 million young refugees to be educated in our schools. There are so many things that you can do to support refugees. It only takes a few minutes each day. Our goal today is that we all go home committed to doing something to change this world in which 65 million of our neighbors are displaced from their homes and have nowhere to go. We can tutor, we can donate, we can change policy. It only takes a few voices to make a difference. And you are here to make a difference. Are you ready to make a difference? All right. I'm here in part because my mother was a refugee. She was born in London in 1935. And she was on the last boat of refugees from England to cross the Atlantic at the age of 5 in 1940, while the U-boats were circling. And she had to wear her orange life vest all day and all night on that Atlantic crossing. If she had not been welcomed, I would not be here today. We can welcome our neighbors and our sisters and brothers. Our hearts are big enough. Our country is big enough. Can you say, welcome? Welcome. Thank you. We have an incredible program today. Are you ready? Please welcome to the stage Ekhlas Ahmed from Sudan, Darfur.
Hello. My name is Ikhlas Ahmed, and I am from Darfur, Sudan. Imagine living a life where you know you can't go back to your homeland, where your connections to all of your family stories have been broken. My parents and grandparents often tell me of the place where we come from and the success and the strength of our community. But now, I know I can't go back. I can only imagine because of the genocide that is happening in Darfur, Sudan. For the past 13 years, Darfur has been faced with the systematic and well-organized genocide, and no one seems to want to take action. For the past 13 years, 480,000 people have been killed. For the past 13 years, 2.8 million have been displaced. And you are a witness of that, seeing me here today. For the past 13 years, my home is a place of war. For the past 13 years, Darfur is in a genocide. It is quiet in Darfur, but it's not the silence of peace. It is the silence of death. My mothers that once were leaders of our community are now used as war weapons. My sisters that once had potential to be future leaders are now used as a war weapon. My home that once carried history of generations is now burnt into ashes, waiting on the ground for the wind to blow them to their final destination. So I'm here. I'm here to speak on their behalf. I speak for the 1,000 women who have been speaking forever, but no one is here to listen. I'm speaking on behalf of the 1,000 girls who are used as a war weapon and have been speaking, but there's no one for them to listen to. I am here to speak so they can be heard. I might have to admit, it was not easy. It was not easy leaving my homeland.
It was one of the hardest things that I have ever done in my life. Leaving the place that I called home. Leaving the place that held all my dreams and memories. But this is the struggle that I face every day here in the United States. But I'm determined. I'm determined to hold on to those images of my country to keep me going. To keep me going as I want to accomplish my dreams in this country and be the leader and raise above the violence and poverty of my past. I never thought in my wildest dream that I would call the U.S. my home. But after living here for over 9 years, I value it more than ever. The U.S. is my second home. I respect everyone that has helped me to bring me to where I am today. I'm here not to only help myself, but 100% to help my community because they were there when I needed them the most. And I'm also here when now they need me the most to speak about race, gender, equality. Not for me, but for the thousands who have been speaking, but no one is there to listen. I am determined to speak on their behalf. It is not one person's job. No, it is all of our jobs to help those who are in need. In Portland, Maine, in Sudan, Darfur, in places all around the world, it is not one community's job, but it's all of our jobs as citizens to help those who are in need by simple things, taking risk. Yes, taking risk is a big thing, but why not? I took one, my family took one, and it brought me to where I am today. So take a risk and help those who are in need of your help. Thank you.
Please welcome to the stage Tom Andrews, the President and CEO of the Unitarian Universalist Service Committee, and his son, Hooper.
Thank you very much. It is an honor and a pleasure to join all of you today to speak truth to power for those who really need to hear it, those who make decisions here in Washington, D.C. We seek a just and compassionate response to asylum seekers who are literally running for their lives, including those who have miraculously escaped from the areas of Central America that are among the most dangerous places on Earth. They who have risked their lives to save their children from this violence had absolutely nothing to do with the conditions from which they are running. But those who make decisions in this town, presidents and congresses, Democrat and Republican, have made very bad decisions in the past that have helped create those very murderous conditions that these asylum seekers are running from. It seems to me that we in this city have a special responsibility and moral obligation to welcome them with compassion and fairness. But ladies and gentlemen, let's be frank. I used to work here. I used to serve as a member of Congress from the 1st Congressional District of Maine. And I can tell you something. What we are calling for is not going to be easy. And there's three major hurdles that we've got to confront that we're facing out there. Number one is the fear and xenophobia that is filling the airwaves of Americans by unscrupulous politicians who have decided to use that fear and xenophobia as a political weapon to score cheap political points and gain politically. Well, we can't allow them to get away with it. Number one. Number two, it has created an atmosphere of fear among politicians and candidates who are being told by their pollsters, don't touch this issue because it's so volatile. It's a losing issue. Stay away from it. We need those who believe as we do that the United States must change its policy to speak up, to be heard, and have the backbone to stand up for truth and compassion and fairness for refugees, and to be able to say it out on the campaign trail. And number three, while the American public hear the xenophobia and fear on the one hand and silence on the other hand, they are only hearing one side of the story. They need to hear our side of the story. We need to have organizing around this country that will talk to people neighborhood by neighborhood, family by family, and explain the truth. Because without that, not only do we have this political climate, but we have a government working right now in the United States of America that is not doing the right thing when it comes to these refugees. Vice President Biden, just last week, described the Obama administration's approach to refugees and asylum seekers as humane and fair, in great contrast to the fear-mongering of some politicians. Well, what does humane mean in reality from this administration? Well, it means expanding family detention, including the detention of toddlers. It means mass deportations and family separations on an unprecedented scale. It means home raids targeting asylum-seeking families from Central America. As I speak, there are mothers from Central America who are in detention at the Berks County Detention Facility in Pennsylvania who are on a hunger strike because of the conditions that they are forced to bear and that their children are forced to bear. Conditions that we now know are having very, very harsh consequences psychologically to these children who have been locked up for months and months, some over a year. This has to stop. We have to stand up very clearly and tell this administration that family detention should be stopped once and for all. End it. End it. And end it now. We have to stand up to this hateful xenophobia. We have to stand up for those who with great courage have risked everything to come here only asking for fairness and asylum. And we have to stand up, ladies and gentlemen, for the principles and values that are celebrated by these monuments and edifices that surround us, but that are being undermined and attacked by politicians and that are in great danger today in this city and around the country. We need to make those principles and values live and breathe, not just be in a monument in Washington, D.C. Let me conclude by saying that Vice President Biden referred last week to, and I'm quoting here, our cherished history as a nation of immigrants. Well, the best way to cherish that history is to make history. And the best way to make history is to stand up and make sure that this government changes course and establishes respect and dignity and fairness for those who are running for their lives seeking compassion and fairness here in this country, seeking asylum. Let's work to change history. And let's work to make that history one that our children and our grandchildren will be proud of, because, ladies and gentlemen, it is truly a matter of life and death. Thank you so very much for being here. We've got a lot of work to do. Thank you. Thank you.
Please welcome to the stage our next speaker. He's an Emmy Award-nominated Iraqi journalist, Ali Al-Mushakil.
Hello, everybody. My name is Ali Al-Mushakil, and I want to share with you my story, why I had to flee, and how I became a refugee. I spent most of my life in Iraq, working hard and content with an ordinary life. However, starting in the year 2006, I saw the chaos and conflict descend on our society. I saw violence, the breakdown of law and order, the scarcity of food and clean water, the collapse of important institutions such as schools and hospitals, all of which caused the quality of life to rapidly deteriorate. My family and I lived in constant fear of what tomorrow would bring. I ruminated about whether or not I would live to see another sunrise. I was crippled with a sense of helplessness because I was not able to control anything in my life. I witnessed with great despair the political and social unrest in the aftermath of the war in Iraq, which turned the country, literally, into a wasteland. Everyone there lived under the perpetual shadow of death, with the risk of getting killed, kidnapped, and tortured, or getting caught in the crossfire for simply being in the wrong place at the wrong time. I spent the last years of my life in Iraq, in the city of Baghdad, which was the most dangerous place on earth. It is hard to explain how frightening the situation there was. No matter what part of the city, car bombs, IEDs, and ongoing sectarian violence occurred almost daily and turned the city into an open battlefield, which could make a simple thing like returning home from work or from shopping a lethal danger for the residents. The risk was compounded several fold for myself and my family due to my being a journalist working for an international media organization. Hundreds of Iraqi journalists were killed while I worked there. Some were shot dead. Some were tortured to death, and others disappeared, never to be heard from again. Others were intimidated to silence or had to flee the country after they were threatened by tactics. Tactics such as bullets sent to their homes in an envelope. Everyone knew and dreaded that message. My wife stood by me in those troubled times, never complaining or demanding. But the deep sadness in her eyes constantly reminded me of the fear of annihilation that her family faced every day. Sometimes I felt that we were living in a state of dissociation, desensitized and numbed by the unabated reports of killings. Human life had turned into a casual statistics. Sometimes I had to pretend that I was not afraid in order to instill a sense of safety and hope into my family members. However, in the end, I realized that the dangers were not going away anytime soon and that I had to make a decision for the future of my family. I made the big decision to leave my home and my country altogether. When I set out with my family on the journey away from my native land, my destination was not a particular location, city or country. It was actually getting to a situation that offered a sense of safety to me and my family, where we could breathe a sigh of relief. A situation where we can go to bed without the imminent fear of being captured, tortured, or killed. I understand that this is the feeling that more than 60 million refugees around the world are yearning for. I knew that I was going to leave behind some family and friends, but I felt that it was the only thing that made sense. I had to find the precious luxury of safety again for myself and my family. My family and I arrived to Portland, Maine 2 years ago. We constantly remind each other of God's gift to us, which millions around the globe wish for, the gift of safety and freedom to pursue one's dream. I teach my sons Ahmed, 11, and Yusuf, 6, and my daughter Ilyan, 4 years old, to be grateful for the opportunity they are afforded in this community, to grow and learn and give back to our community. Thank you. Thank you for your support.
Hello, DC Rally for Refugees. This is Gregory Porter. I want to thank you for coming out today or for watching the rally on live stream. Sorry I can't be there today. I'm in France, but I'm proud to have my song running and video there along with Keon and Andrea to represent me. We are witnessing the largest refugee crisis since World War II. 65 million refugees and displaced persons around the world. Refugees need our help, and any small action you can take can make a difference. In fact, go to iTunes right now and download this song, and you'll make a contribution to the cause, since the proceeds go directly to supporting refugees. Get involved Before you leave the rally today, visit the resource tent and find out how you can do something to help. Peace and love, and thank you.
Can you see strength in my eyes? I used to sleep through the night. Then hurricane, there were no lights, no sirens, just guns. It was violent and we had to run or die. I'm running, I'm running, I'm running. I'm running. So much time wasted in tents, 17 years inside a fence. I ran from the war, homeless, no school, no future. I'm a ghost, but not finished. I will run. Say, oh.
Running to is running through my mind. Always on the run, am I running out of time? Darkness in my way, I pray that the sun will shine. Started from the bottom and that was underlined by the place that I'm running. From, sometimes it's undivine. I hear them songs of freedom and they running through my mind. Close my eyes, imagine a place next to me where I no longer can be labeled a refugee. Destiny holds somewhere down these dark roads. Yeah, we the lost tribe, but we found our souls. Cold rain, old pain, I left along the way. I fight through the night just to find a stronger day.
Running from the place that I know.
I'm running.
What direction should I go?
I'm running.
So tired and so worn. I won't stop until I'm safe and strong.
Sing no
and flee the place you love.
Sing
tough as nails when things got rough.
Say, oh, oh.
Many fathers told their sons.
Say, oh,
and daughters, oh. Don't stop running till you're home.
Say, oh, oh.
Refugee song.
Say, oh.
Please welcome Sarah Hall from Saracen, the Latino Resource and Justice Center.
Good afternoon, everyone. We've heard stories from Syria. We've heard stories from other parts of the Middle East. And we've heard stories from Central America. These are the faces of refugees here in the United States, around the world. These are people fleeing violence, and unfortunately for a lot of people fleeing violence in Central America, they are not recognized as refugees here in the United States. They instead are sent back to face horrible, horrible violence, gang violence, extortion on the streets of their hometowns in El Salvador, in Guatemala, in Honduras. In 2014, President Obama called this a humanitarian situation when we had so many unaccompanied minors coming to the border and fleeing violence. And yet, this is a situation that has been met with deterrence, with detention, and with deportation. You can see on the screen faces of Salvadorans, of Guatemalans, of Hondurans who are fleeing violence, who are living here in the United States. They have made the journey and they are on their way to finding some type of relief here in the US. But there are so many more like them who make the journey and instead are sent back, in some cases, to death in their home countries. These are people seeking life free of violence. These are human beings. Thank you.
It's my great pleasure to bring our next speaker on the stage. She's from El Salvador. We have a huge, beautiful community of Salvadorans here in Washington, D.C. It originates from a refugee resettlement program. Is that not true? We can welcome others. Rocio Perez, please put your hands together.
Hi. My name is Rocio Perez. I come from Portland, Maine, and I am a junior at Casco Bay High School, and I'm a first-generation American and proud child of immigrants from El Salvador. I'm a bit short. Thanks to the media and politicians, immigrants have been painted into this twisted image. My parents are immigrants, and I know they're not criminals, nor are they stealing your jobs or your money. They do not fit your twisted image of intolerance. My tías and my tío and our family friends and that man who owns the bakery you like, none of them fit your painting. The immigrants your narrow mindset knows are not the ones I know. These are the inmigrantes that I know. Un inmigrante is the one picking your strawberries so you can have them for breakfast. The berry-picking inmigrante has a family, and every morning he gets up with his daughter and they go to the field to pick your berries for about $6 a day, bending their backs with little to no lunch and rest breaks, only to go home to cramped living conditions. But go on and keep eating your strawberries from a package that reached Driscoll. Una migrante is the woman who keeps your house tidy and takes care of your kids as if they were her own. Un inmigrante is the man who fixes your car as good as new. Un inmigrante is the person you yelled at to go back to the country. But they are proudly Mexican living in California, and before the treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo, California era Mexico. Un inmigrante is a person who works hard every day, feeling the aches down to the marrow of their bones. I don't care what Merriam-Webster has to say. Inmigrantes are people like my parents who make sure their children get the opportunities and the education they deserve because my parents didn't have a choice. They had their families that they had to help because they've been working and working and hustling since day one. But me, I've been given the opportunity, and that shows here today. It all started when I was born in this country, and my parents made sure I knew from a young age how precious education is. These are the inmigrantes I know. They're my parents and my family and anyone else who can find themselves within these words. Because these words are already within their veins, because there are ink bottles spilling and permanently etching their stories into this nation's history. Thank you.
Please welcome Zarin Taj, a refugee who came to the United States from Afghanistan in 2000. She's a human rights activist and author. Zarin Taj.
Hi, everybody. Today we are here to stand with solidarity with refugees around the world. We are here to tell the world we are no longer silenced. We are here to remind all our fellow citizens that United States has long been leaders in helping people who are fleeing violence and persecutions. Now, I would like to ask this question. Who wants U.S. to accept more refugees? Yes. Who believes when we deny access to refugees, we are going against our founding principles? Yes, then we should ask our leaders to accept more refugees in this country. We should ask our leaders to help refugees to escape from violence and persecutions. And again, I would like again to remind you guys, this coming September is the first year for the University of Drowning Alan Kurdi. This child's horrific death shocked the world. It reminded us today to prevent refugee children from dying and killing every day. It reminds us that we should not turn our backs and close our eyes and just see the children, refugees around the world, are drowning in the sea. We should see them, we should hear their voices, and we should act. We should make a difference to their lives. It's also a reminder for all of us to work together to make a difference and ask U.S. action at home and overseas. I'm honored to stand before you to report the situation of Afghan refugees around the world. Afghan refugees are the second largest refugee population in the world. They are not economic migrants. Again, I would like to emphasize they are not economic migrants, which most of media report. It is an insult for those refugees who are dying and while they are making a dangerous journey. The Afghan government no longer provides protection to people from killing and dying and also attack of Taliban. They leave Afghanistan because they have no any other choice. They know the risk of drowning at the sea and suffocating by truck and by smugglers. The recent migration of Afghan are a result of chaotic situation in Afghanistan. The majority of migrants belong to minority ethnic group in Afghanistan, particularly Hazara ethnic group, the third largest ethnic group in Afghanistan, who are the target of mass killing by ISIS, Al-Qaeda, and Taliban. As a refugee, I know what does it means to be a refugee, and it is not an easy decision to leave the country or leave everything behind. They know it's a dangerous journey. They know the smuggler tell them 99% of chance of dying, only 1% of chancing to remain alive. But they still make this kind of dangerous journey. Why? Because they have no any other choice. I would like to highlight the three recent incidents in Afghanistan to clarify why Afghans are leaving Afghanistan. 3 days ago, there was an attack in Kabul University, American University in Kabul. 13 killed and 36 people were wounded. Last month, during a big peaceful demonstration in Kabul, more than 100 people were killed and more than 300 people were wounded. The recent abduction and beheading of 7 Hazara civilians, including women and children, in Zabul province, Afghanistan. They beheaded 9-year-old girl. If a family cannot protect their children, they have no life. They have to leave the country. The Afghan refugee situation is extremely politicized. They are dehumanized, and they are not treated and not welcome as other refugees around the world. The European Union country give priority to refugees from other countries over Afghan refugees. They need help and protection similar as other refugees around the world. It's a fact that the majority of 21st century Afghan refugees belong to minority ethnic groups, and they have proven they have integrated easily and contributed to the host countries. They brought the skills and mentality of hardship and wisdom of coexisting peacefully in the host country, who saved their lives from the harm. I left my country as a child and live in Pakistan for many years as a refugee in refugee camp. I know what that means personally to be a refugee. I came to U.S. in 2000. Now I'm a naturalized U.S. citizen. I arrived in country with dreams and hope. I would work hard and finish my bachelor and master. And I was the first woman to went back to make a documentary about five massacre side of Taliban in Afghanistan. I was the first woman who wrote a book about dual oppression of Hazara women being women and target ethnic group during the Taliban era. The land of this land of opportunity do not just allow me to be safe in this country and help me to reach my dream. It allow me to give back to my birth country and my immigrant community here. I become a successful advocate for refugees. I become a mentor, translator, speaker, and community leader to help my fellow refugee to integrate better in this country. Now I have a middle class and two beautiful children. They are not just safe in this country. They are rich with all kinds of opportunities. We Afghan refugees appreciate the opportunity and use it for making it life better. We truly realize how generous and welcoming United States has been traditionally. But we are asking more to do. We ask United States of America to accept more Afghan refugees. Thank you.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Pivo Zotamo. I grew up in Guinea-Conakry. It's a former French colony in West Africa. And my father has to flee the country in 2007 because he was in a political disagreement with the corrupt government. Through the program that I've been through, I was participating. I wrote some rap song that I'm gonna rap today. But it's gonna be for today. It's gonna be French because people told me that I was interested to rap in French. I was just gonna give a little brief of what the French is about. Well, I wrote the French about, like, refugees, how they come to the United States, all the struggle that they face on their way, and also how Africa can progress in dignity as well. That was my plan, and that's just what the rap is about in French. And I'm sorry if you don't understand French, but hopefully you enjoy it. Thank you.
Ça se défie, il faut la quitter aussi. Pour que toi aies la chance, c'est moi c'est qui choisit. Il n'a pas douloureux tout ce que pour Dieu me déhive. La route se sacre, mais un jour vas-tu en rire. Ainsi faut maintenir des gens la erreur de vie en vue la gloire. Mais tout est tellement plus beau quand on est ivre. La jalousie nous ronge pour ma part, pour les écrits. On veut tous une belle mort, jusqu'à l'instant met un prix. La suite des crises, que Dieu te garde, c'est mon témoignage qui fond du cœur. C'est un hommage que tu saches, le silence est tôt. Y'a la malaise, que c'est le frère qui t'a sauvé. C'est un hommage que tu saches, le cœur c'est d'accord. Dans la ville, soyons toujours ensemble. Respectons les uns et les autres pour une vie éternelle. Yeah. Dans la ville, soyons toujours ensemble. Respectons les uns et les autres pour une vie.
Hello everyone. My name is Rehab Al-Qadi. I'm Syrian refugee. I came to the United States from Turkey at the end of September 2015. Actually, we were lucky because we were selected by U.S. government. We waited in Turkey 2 years to come to the United States. We did 5 interviews, medical examination, security check to come to the United States. We fled the war in Syria. We fled the violence in Syria. After the war break out and destroy everything, destroy our dreams, homes, separate the family. We didn't choose to leave our country, but the difficult situation there forced us to abandon our country. We fled looking for a safe place to live and raise our son. I remember the first few weeks here were so difficult. Everything was hard. New country, new language, new culture, new everything. No family, no father, no mother, no sister, no brother, nothing, no friends. Even the word refugee was uncomfortable to me. I thought I'm less than other. But after time, I realized I'm not less than the other. We are all human. I realized refugee is someone who has lost everything, who needs to rebuild their life and start a new life from zero, or maybe below zero. In my country, I was engineer. My husband was doctor. We had a nice life. But the war destroyed everything. Now I'm taking English class. At first, when I came to the United States, it was so hard to me to speak in front of a people in new language. But now, I can do it. And hopefully, I will go back to college after finishing English. The life will go on. Life never stops. There is hardships in the beginning, but nothing impossible. We have to work hard. We have to adapt with a new community. We have to be positive people. And I want people to know, when Syrian comes to America, they are not trying to be a burden on anyone. They not come for a benefit. They want to work and they want to live in peace with their dignity. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Beautiful. While all refugees are vulnerable, some communities face extra danger and are especially so. One is the LGBTQ community. It's my pleasure to introduce to you Ty Cobb, the Director of International Programs for the Human Rights Campaign.
Hello. My name is Ty Cobb, and I'm the Director of HRC Global at the Human Rights Campaign. The Human Rights Campaign is the U.S.'s largest civil rights organization for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer people. I recently met an asylum seeker here in D.C., who fled Iraq because he's gay. For me, he said, it was not a question of if, but when he would be attacked. Because in Iraq, gay men and so many others are facing horrific levels of violence. As many as 10 countries allow the death penalty against gays and lesbians. Hundreds of murders of trans people happen every year that are documented. Just last weekend, ISIL militants pushed 4 men off a rooftop in Mosul. What was their crime? Being gay. There are hundreds more documented stories of individuals who are facing similar feats and fates at the hands of ISIS and others like them. So this asylum seeker told me his last days in Iraq seemed like a ticking time bomb. It was just waiting to go off. When would someone out him? When would militia come for him? And when might he be killed?
Oh, say your dream's gone. When the earthquake can help him make it through a storm. When I fall back, my topic to stay on drum. Well, I really not have a love so strong. When the radio isn't on, you can hear the song. I got a lie on the dark road you're walking on. A signpost to find a dream you thought was gone. So when it helped those obstacles, you stumble on. So when it helped you rebuild after the rub was gone. Well, world connect your power, come and bond. Love, the whole pan singing along.
We are the world. We are the world.
You've been listening to Voices and Artists from the Rally for Refugees, held August 28, 2016 on the National Mall. The rally maintains an online presence at rallyforrefugees.org with the number 4. This is On the Ground, onthegroundshow.org, Voices of Resistance from the nation's capital, produced for WPFW Pacifica Radio in Washington, D.C. I'm Esther Avaram, and I thank you for listening. You can reach this show at onthegroundshow.org, where you can also listen to all of our shows. Please don't forget to like our Facebook and Twitter pages at On the Ground Show. Raise your voice out there. Peace. I'm